Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, as Planned Parenthood and the topic of abortion continue to dominate the news, pro-life Christians across the country are being asked to defend their beliefs. When they're faced with these tough questions, I think in many cases it's easy for Christians to feel ill-equipped. Are the unborn actually human or merely tissue? What makes humans valuable? How should pro-life Christians respond to the charge that they're anti-women's rights? These questions and others are questions that come up all the time as we talk with others about what's taking place with Planned Parenthood and the topic of abortion in general. Well, here to help us work through some of those questions is Scott Klusendorf. Scott is the president of a Life Training Institute where he trains pro-life advocates to persuasively defend their views. He's a passionate and engaging platform speaker. He's also a pro-life presentations have been featured by Focus on the Family, Truth That Transforms, the American Family Radio. He holds a master's degree in Christian apologetics from Biola University, and he is the author of Pro-Life 101 and The Case for Life. Joining us now is Scott Klusendorf. Scott, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Kevin, good to be back.
Scott, and you've recently come out with just 3 points or 3 ways that people that are pro-life, especially Christians that are pro-life, can defend their pro-life views in just 5 minutes or less. Would you do us a favor and, first of all, maybe let me let you give a little bit of commentary about what has taken place here over the last couple of weeks with the videos that have been released. I'd love to hear your view on what's going on and why that it's so important. And then, if we could, let's work through those 3 points that you talk about on your website.
Well, Kevin, I'll tell you what, it's a remarkable moment right now. I mean, I haven't seen anything this extraordinary in 25 years of doing pro-life work. We, for the first time in my memory, are having a moment where the American public is looking at the act of abortion, and that has to happen in order for us to win this fight. Mm. As long as abortion remains abstract, it will never change. And we've got a long history of social reform that proves this. For example, if you look at what happened with King Leopold in the Congo at the turn of the 18th and 19th century, he was exploiting poor workers down there to produce rubber and ivory. And what he ended up doing is taking children and adults who didn't produce their requisite quotas, and he would cut their limbs off. And it was American missionaries, particularly Alice Harris, who, using very crude photographic equipment that was available at the time, took pictures of these victims and went all over the U.S. and Western Europe exposing this evil, and it came to an end because people saw it. And the same is true with abortion. When you see what Planned Parenthood is doing, not only in trafficking in fetal parts, but the act of actually killing these children and then profiting, the public is taking a second look at this. And as Christians, we've got to be prepped to step up and engage.
Now, we've seen before, there were people on the protest lines outside of abortion clinics that held up pictures. But those pictures didn't seem to have the same impact that these videos are having. Is that because we're hearing the words of the people in Planned Parenthood themselves and the cavalier way that they're talking about life? Or is it because the video has more power than the still photograph? What's the difference?
The difference is huge numbers of Americans are seeing these pictures when they're put on display nationally by Fox News. They don't see these pictures when only a few pro-lifers are standing out in front of clinics. And the ability of pro-lifers to get their message out so huge numbers of people can hear it has been thwarted by the fact there's been relative media silence. But now with these undercover videos, it's forcing the public to deal with them, and news outlets are having to decide, do we want to just ignore a story that has a lot of legs to it, or are we going to go ahead and jump on board here? And I think that enough of them are saying, look, you know what, we can't just ignore this. They may not show everything that Fox did the other night when it actually showed the remains of one of these aborted fetuses, but they are having to talk about the story, and people are going to YouTube. You look at the videos. I mean, they're getting unbelievable numbers of views. This is a win for our side. It's not a win for the children who were killed, but it's a win that we are at least using this moment to exploit the reality that abortion kills an innocent human being, and that has to be shown to the public.
We finally seem to have some momentum on this issue. There was a news report yesterday that said that New Hampshire canceled $650,000 in Planned Parenthood funding. New Hampshire is not a bastion of conservative thought, and yet we see even there they were able to cancel this funding. That's a huge victory, right?
It is. And if you look at Planned Parenthood's own services report, in other words, not pro-life data, but just look at Planned Parenthood's own numbers, and here's what you'll find. You'll find that over 94% of the services they offer to pregnant women were designed to kill their unborn children. That's 94%. They provided nurturing prenatal care to just over 5% of those children. So when it comes to pregnant women, Planned Parenthood is in the baby-killing business. It's not in the business of doing mammograms and cancer screenings and prenatal care. And by the way, when you hear people say, well, we need Planned Parenthood because poor women can't get medical care that they need, I thought Obamacare was supposed to provide all that for us. Why do we need Planned Parenthood? And especially when they're not doing medical care, they're providing abortions. That's their primary service.
Mm-hmm. When people are disgusted in watching these videos, I think they really have this epiphany moment where all of a sudden they realize not only is this disgusting, but they're paying for it as the American taxpayer, to the tune of, I believe it's around $2 billion that are being funded or funneled to Planned Parenthood, as you just spoke about, is primarily, by far, primarily in the business of killing babies.
Yeah, and it's clearly against the law to profit from aborted fetal tissue, and these videos indicate that's exactly what Planned Parenthood is doing. I'm not overly optimistic we're going to see the Obama Justice Department investigate this, but the word is getting out there, and individual states, like you mentioned, are taking action. New Hampshire, Louisiana, we just had an investigation yesterday come out of Florida that Planned Parenthood clinics were skirting the law down there. This stuff is starting to break open, and as Christians, it's vitally important we know how to use this moment to bring biblical truth to the abortion issue. And if we're not equipped to do that, moments like this may not come around again for a while. So we need to step up and do it.
Well, let me tell our listening audience, the way for you to get equipped is to read what I consider to be the best book for making the case. It's called The Case for Life. It's published by Crossway. You can go out there to their website, www.crossway.org, in order to get a copy of the book. But it is written by Scott Klusendorf that we're speaking to now. And in that book, you're going to get more detail, obviously, that we're able to talk about on the program today. But he will help you in that book to be able to articulate the pro-life position and to do it in a winsome way. Other than that book, I would encourage you to go to Scott's website, which is prolifetraining.com. That's prolifetraining.com. And you can go out there to find out more about Scott and to learn other ways in which you can present the pro-life position in a very winsome way. That's what I want to do right now. I want to give a little bit of a training course, if we could, Scott, on the program today. Your website says this, how to defend your pro-life views in 5 minutes or less, and it gives this scenario in the introduction. Suppose you have just 5 minutes to graciously defend your pro-life beliefs with friends or classmates. Can you do it with a rational argument? What would you say? How can you simplify the abortion issue for those who think it is hopelessly complex? Well, here are three steps to be able to do it. Scott, the first step is clarify the issue. How would we do that?
We do that by showing that the issue of abortion is not about choice, not about trusting women, not about controlling one's own body. It's about one primary question: what is the unborn? You can't answer the question, can we kill the unborn, until you answer the question, what is the unborn? My friend Greg Kokel puts it well. Imagine your five-year-old comes up behind you while you're washing dishes at the kitchen sink, and with your back turned, he says to you, "Daddy, can I kill this?" Well, the first question you're going to ask is, what has he got? I mean, cockroach, snail, have fun, just don't show your mother. Neighbor kitty, whoa. And if he's got his brother by the throat, you need counseling. But you would never in a billion years say, sure, son, have at it, till you answered that predicate question, what has he got? And the problem is, the American public today is talking about abortion without answering the question, what is the unborn? A case in point. President Obama, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade a year ago, said the following, and I'll paraphrase it only for the sake of brevity. He said, "We're celebrating this decision, Roe v. Wade, which gave us abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy." He said, "We're celebrating this day or commemorating this day because," and here's the president's words, quote, "this is a nation where everyone deserves their right to pursue their own dreams," end quote. All right, Mr. President, does everyone include the unborn? Is aborting them giving them the option of pursuing their dreams? I mean, this is simply assuming the unborn aren't human. He hasn't argued for it. He just assumes it. And Lewis was very good. C.S. Lewis was very good at pointing out that the most dangerous ideas in the culture are the ones we simply assume, not the ones we spell out. And it's vital that pro-lifers clarify that we've got to answer the question, what is the unborn, before we answer the question, can we kill the unborn? Nobody would argue you can kill a toddler in the name of choice and who decides. They only argue that way with the unborn because they assume the unborn aren't human. They haven't argued for it. They've just assumed it. And we've got to point that out to people.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, just the other day, President Barack Obama, this is from the Federalist, it says President Barack Obama told a group of young African leaders on Monday that harvesting organs from humans that are killed as part of an African ritual was craziness and cruel. A tradition that it needed to stop, and he warned of the dehumanizing marginal groups of humans and of the problem that arises when you're not able to see someone else as being a human being.
Exactly right, and you've hit on a classic example of, once again, he is assuming the unborn are not one of us, because if they were one of us, he would not make that argument in one country but come over here and support Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In your article, then, you make a lot of points that we're skipping because of the five-minute presentation, but I loved your points where you talked of, in your book, where you talked about location is not a valid reason, or viability is not a valid reason for taking the life of the unborn, and so forth. Do you cover those under that first point?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, we cover that in step two, which was where we make our case for the pro-life view.
Nope.
We first simplify the issue by showing it comes down to the question, what is the unborn? We then make a case for the pro-life view using science to argue that the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. And then we use philosophy to argue that there's no essential difference between the embryo you adult you are today that would justify killing you back then. Differences of size, level of development, environment, meaning where we're located, and degree of dependency are not good reasons for saying you could be killed then but not now. And just to illustrate this, imagine the acronym SLED, as Stephen Schwartz has proposed, as a way of remembering the four differences between you, the embryo, Kevin, and you, the adult. And not one of those differences is a good reason for saying you could be killed then but not now. Size, you were certainly smaller as an embryo, but body size as a matter of principle does not determine who lives and who dies. We don't think 2-year-olds who are smaller than 10-year-olds have less of a right to life. Level of development, sure, you were less developed as an embryo than you are today. But since when is that relevant to saying you can be killed? Look, teenagers who I talk to all the time, I spoke to several hundred just in the last couple of weeks, they are less developed than their parents, both physically and intellectually, though it may come as a shock to some of them to hear that. But the reality is you don't reach your intellectual peak till your mid-40s. But that doesn't mean mom and dad have a greater right to life. Environment, there's your E in that acronym. You were in a different location as an embryo inside the womb. Now you're out. But how does where you are determine what you are? When you walked from your car to the studio to do this interview, you didn't stop being you. And if that's true, a journey of 8 inches down the birth canal doesn't change you from non-human, non-valuable thing we can kill to valuable human being we can't. And then finally, degree of dependency. Sure, you depend on your mother for survival. But since when does dependency on another human being mean that we can kill you? There are some children, Kevin, that are born unable to tolerate any nourishment but the mother's milk. What would we think of a mother who said, my body, my choice, and she just lets her child starve to death on grounds that he depends on her for survival? So if you look at these four differences, size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency, think of that acronym SLED. Those are not good reasons for saying you could be killed as an embryo, but not now.
Scott, a couple of the questions that I raised in the, and that acronym is fantastic, and what a simple way to present the pro-life position, the SLED acronym. You can see that, by the way, for our listening audience in the website that I referenced a few moments ago, prolifetraining.com, and it's under the heading of the article that we're talking through, how to defend your pro-life views in 5 minutes or less. You can see that spelled out there for you. And also, as I mentioned in the book, in even greater detail, the case for life, which you can get through Crossway. But Scott, we've a couple of the questions that I raised in the beginning, we've dealt with them somewhat, but I want to make sure that we answer them clearly. The first question was, are the unborn actually human or merely tissue? The second question was, what makes humans valuable? And the third was, you know, you Christians are just all anti-women's rights. How would you answer those?
Well, first of all, I think we need to ask the question, how is this relevant to the debate? Let's suppose we all hate women, Kevin. Let's suppose we don't give a rip about them. We think they're inferior. How does that in any way change the pro-life argument that the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings, and that intentionally killing them is wrong? Would abortion still be wrong even if pro-lifers are bigots? Well, of course it would be. But that aside, it's factually untrue. Pro-life crisis pregnancy centers now outnumber abortion clinics by the figures I've last seen at least 2-1, nearing 3-1. On top of that, we need to ask the question, which women are we allegedly engaging in a war against? Unborn women? Literally what this comes down to is one side of this debate is guilty of bullying. They think that small people can be picked on by larger people. That's the real moral principle to look at here. Who's doing the real war on women? Not pro-lifers when they're giving their resources to help care for them when they're pregnant and help bring their children to term through the use of crisis pregnancy center ministry. We just think that no unborn humans, born or unborn, men or women should be picked on because of their size.
Yeah, I love to say that our view, the Christian view, the pro-life view of women is actually more liberal in its application than the view that is held by the pro-choice or pro-abortion groups, because they're limiting the right, the most basic right, the right to life, to only a certain group of women, and we're extending it to all women, even the woman in the womb.
So that's a good way to go, Kevin. You're smart to do that. And look, in the past we used to discriminate on the basis of skin color and gender. Now we do it on the basis of size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency. We've just swapped one form of discrimination for another.
And it's a great time to bring that point up. Your third point that you that you talk about in the list of three ways to give your pro-life position in under 5 minutes, you say then challenge your listeners to be intellectually honest. Explain that.
Well, what we mean is allow them an opportunity to face the implications of their view. If you're going to argue, for example, that the fetus does not have a right to life because he's not self-aware, you can't just stop with the unborn. You're also going to have to discriminate against newborns because they're not self-aware either. Neither are people in reversible comas. And this brings up what I think is a key point for the pro-life position. We are better at explaining human equality than our critics are. The pro-life view is that each and every human being has an equal right to life, period, because he has a human nature. And we ground human value in our shared human nature that we all have equally. You either have a human nature or you don't. It's not a degreed thing like self-awareness is. The problem with the other side of this debate, the pro-choice side, they don't ground human value in our common human nature. They ground it in some property that may come and go in the course of our lifetime and that none of us share equally. I mean, just think about your listeners for a moment, Kevin. Are all of us equally self-aware at this moment? No. Some of us had coffee and we're on a caffeine high. Others of us, you know, we need a cup. We are not equally self-aware. We're not equally capable of feeling pain. We're not equally capable of intellectual pursuits. But we think we're all equal anyway. Why? It must be because of something that doesn't come and go and that we can share in a way that isn't equal, but we are nonetheless human. And the only thing you can point to that we all share equally is our common human nature that came to be when you came to be. Well, when did you come to be? Well, science of embryology is pretty clear on this. You came to be at fertilization. So our view can objectively ground human value in our common human nature. Our opponents can't ground human equality fairly because they ground it on things that come and go and that none of us share equally. If self-awareness gives us value, those with more of it have a greater right to life than those with less, and that doesn't just stop at birth.
Scott, you know that the Trump card that they're going to try to pull on this is going to be the rape case. They're going to say, well, then you people are saying that that young girl that was raped, she is going to be forced to have that child, and that's going to do mental anguish and so forth to that. And that's, you know, I can't believe that you people would want to force her to do that.
Yeah.
You would say?
Well, there'd be two people who bring up rape, the Inquirer and the Crusader. The Inquirer is intellectually honest. She just wants to reconcile her new respect for the pro-life view with the rape question, which troubles her. And for that person, I'll say the following. You know, you and I agree that a woman who is raped and gets pregnant may indeed suffer painful memories every time she looks at her child. I agree with you on that. Given we agree on that point, how do you think a civil society should treat innocent human beings who remind us of a painful event? Is it okay to kill them so we can feel better? Now, that will get her thinking about the moral logic in play. The Crusader doesn't want to think. He just wants to make you look bad. I'll go to him a different way. I'll say, okay, for the sake of argument, let's agree that abortion should be allowed in cases of rape. It's not my position, but just for the sake of this discussion, grant it. Will you now join me in opposing all other abortions that are not due to rape? And, of course, he's going to say no, at which case I'll call his bluff. Well, then why did you bring up rape when your real position is abortion should be available for any reason the woman wants? Defend that position. Don't hide behind rape victims. I mean, saying we should get rid of all abortion laws because you might have a rape case is kind of like saying let's get rid of all traffic laws because you might run a red light rushing a loved one to the hospital. It doesn't make the case that abortion should be legal in any reason because it were allowed in the case of rape. Now, of course, I don't believe it should be legally available in the case of rape because the unborn are human there just like they are any other case, and we want to present those rape victims with compassionate care and our love. But saying we can kill one human being so another can feel better isn't morally sound reasoning.
Scott, 30 seconds left in the broadcast. Your final encouragement to those listening today?
Number one, master the moral logic of the pro-life view. Get a copy of The Case for Life. It's readable. Master the view. Secondly, keep talking up this Planned Parenthood thing, and don't be afraid to show people what abortion is. The public is looking. They need to see it.
Scott, thank you so much for writing about this. Thank you so much for your training, and thank you for visiting with us for a few moments on the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
Appreciate it, Pastor.
All right, thanks again. That was Scott Klusendorf. He's the president of Life Training Institute. He's the author of the book we've been talking about, The Case for Life. Again, you can get that out at Crossway. That's www.crossway.org. Get a copy of that. Go out to Scott's website and see what he says there about the three simple steps that he uses to teach Christians how to defend their pro-life position in 5 minutes or less. We got to get involved, and we got to get involved now, my friend. This is a Wilberforce moment. Let's get involved. Remember, Jesus said this. He said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free."
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.